Do you listen when you are spoken to? This is a good question. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. Do you listen when you are spoken to? Do you answer the questions that are asked? Do you know one rhetorical question from another? What does rhetorical mean? Rhetorical means you are being asked a rhetorical question which does not call for an answer. It just calls for an interesting intuitiveness on your part. Why do you think mice have eyes? And you look at me and say, I don't know. I'm not asking you to tell me. I'm asking you to think about it. Think about it. Why do mice have eyes? I didn't say, tell me why mice have eyes, or do mice have eyes, and do mice have eyes so that you can tell me about it, or what do I say, you know? And this is goes on. Most public speakers are rhetorical speakers. They're speakers who provide you with a question and then provide you with the answer to the question. They say, we've all wondered why the world is round. That's a definitely rhetorical question. And anybody can come up with an answer if they want. But why is the world round? Now, that's another rhetorical question. I'm giving the lecture. I got the platform. It's not time for me to talk. And it's not time for you to butt in. I say, why is the world round, Sylvia? Why is the world round? Why? And Sylvia looks at me. She says, I'd like to answer you, but I know it's a rhetorical question. I'm not supposed to answer rhetorical questions, you know. And, you know, she's a very dutiful person. I said, beautiful doodleful, you know, whatever I want to say. Okay. She's a very dutiful person, and she doesn't do things that she shouldn't do. So, now, why do, and again, rhetorical question, why do people ask questions as they are giving talks or lectures? Because they want people to move out from the same basis that they did. Now, I asked myself, why is a coffee cup usually holding one cup full of fluid? Actually, it holds more than a cup full of fluid because you like to put milk in it, or cream, or water, or nothing. Or you don't want it to the brim of the glass, you know, with the water, because if you have it that way, you can't very well get it. You always are shaky when you got it something that you got to control carefully. But if it were down to here, you wouldn't even think about a half full glass, you know, drink it with no problem. But if it's full right to the rim, you get your lips over there as quick as possible to suck off to the top of the water, you know. And this is all part of rhetorical thinking. Now, if you tell a blind man that his coffee cup is sitting in front of him and it's all ready for him, he will pick up his coffee cup like this here, and he will drink it, and he will put it back down. And the coffee cup may have been right to the very edge filled with coffee. But he doesn't see it. So he doesn't know it. He just knows that that coffee cup has coffee in it, and he can pick it up and drink it because he has done it many times before. So he does it with balance. He does it with ease. He does it with perfection. But the minute you rhetorically say, now what would you do if I filled that coffee cup up to the top and gave it to you to drink? You say, nothing. I just pick it up and drink it. Shake, shake, shake. Because we enter into the rhetoric of the rhetorical question. And it's a silly thing to do. Now, if we can keep ourselves separated from the illusion and just live and express ourselves in the fact, it's so much easier. It's so much easier. Ingeborg has a great problem every morning of being here in time for the om and the hugs. Ingeborg has just so much hugging and oming to do. She's out hugging her her sticks in the garage and her activities and her kittens and her dogs and her dog food. And we say, Ingeborg, at 8 o'clock, 5 minutes before, come on in, and we will have our hug and our om. Now, Ingeborg, don't you want to have the hug and om? And Ingeborg says, yes, yes. Well, then, why aren't you here? And I don't want an answer. That's a rhetorical question. I don't want to know why she can't be here. I just want to know that she's here, you know. No excuse. There's no excuse. Now, if you don't kiss your spouse in the morning as you leave the house or as you have breakfast together or as you get up out of bed, if you don't kiss your spouse is going to say, I wonder why he's not kissing me, or wonder why she's not kissing me, you know, my breath or something like that. And then you brush your teeth and you make your mouth taste and smell just wonderful, and you even put a little bit of baby powder on your face and so forth, so you just smell like a cuddly baby, you know, something that just wants to be hugged and snuggled and kissed. And then you go to your wife and you say, well, sweetheart, how are you today? And she says, my, don't we smell good? And he said, it's all for you. And she says, well, good for you. And so she goes about her activities and doesn't kiss you. And you go through the day thinking, what in the hell did I do wrong that she doesn't want to kiss me? Now, that's a rhetorical question. You don't even have the answer for yourself. So you come home that evening, and she says, oh, sweetheart, I feel so wonderful. Oh, you do? What happened? Did you kiss somebody today? What happened, you know? She says, well, I went to the dentist, and my tooth has been aching me something terrible for the last couple of days, and I didn't know what it was. And when I got to the dentist, he said, it was a tooth that had to be pulled. And so he pulled it, and I feel so good. I come here, let me show you how I feel. And so she grabs him and kisses him, and he says, I'm glad I didn't ask my rhetorical question. Because, you see, we don't always know why, and we don't always need to know why. But if we just know that we are good people, and if we just like ourselves, all the rest of the world will come around to liking us. All the rest of the world will come around to being the answer of our rhetorical question. How much do I love me? Let me count the ways how much I love me. You know, isn't that the way you say it, Ingeborg? How much I love me. You know, the poet says, "Let how much do I love thee? Let me count the ways and stuff." But I change it, because how much do I love me? If I love me, I never look outward for somebody to approve of me. Because if I do, they are not going to approve of me as much as I deserve to be approved, you know? I mean, I'm really good. And I deserve to have the whole truckload dumped on me. The whole truckload of appreciation and thinking that I'm just the greatest, the greatest, the greatest, you know? You know? Here we are, out of cigarettes, holding hands at midnight, out of cigarettes, two people, sleepy people, too tired to say goodnight, and too much in love to say goodbye. You see, too much in love to say goodbye. Too much in love, I cannot say goodbye because I just... You're me, I'm you, we're one. You know, how do you say goodbye? How do you say goodnight? Good night, sweetheart, till we meet tomorrow. You see, on and on and on. So you just have to love yourself. You just have to... What does a young boy do after his first kiss, according to legend? He gets his first kiss, and he turns around, and it dawns on him, he's got his first kiss, and he jumps up in the air and says, wow! You know, he doesn't know why, because it wasn't all that exciting. You know, it's just a snuggle, just a little schmooch type of thing. But it had a symbolic thing to it. It says to him, you now have kissed the girl. You now are an adult. You now are a man. You now are, you've been kissed. I've been kissed, you know. And the kiss itself, she could never impress him with her kiss more than how he impresses himself. Do you understand?
Yeah.
You see, his feeling of what that kiss meant was so great that no one could have given him a compliment. You've been kissed, and you've been kissed by the best kisser that there is. No, Mom, you don't realize I was kissed by her daughter. Oh? Well, her daughter is only 14. Mom, I was kissed by her daughter. Oh, boy, oh, boy. You know, and the mom doesn't realize that to him, that was a peer kiss because he's 15, you know. That's a peer kiss. That's a kiss by someone his own age, someone in his own group, someone in his own category. And this is why you can never say enough about another person. They have to say it about themselves, but they don't say it in a mean way or in a better than thou way. They said, "I've been kissed. I'm not going to tell anybody. Nobody's going to know that I've been kissed. Nobody's going to know that I've been kissed." You got a silly look on your face. You know, something's wrong with you. Oh, what do you mean? Did you kiss somebody today? How could you tell? Well, because you get that silly asinine look on your face that says you've been kissed for the first time. Well, how do you know it's my first time? Well, it's just written all over you. It's written all over you. It's in your heart, in your soul, in your being. Your face is all red. Your eyes are all aglow. You know, we can tell. But you see, the compliment we give to ourselves at any time in life, for anything at all, is far more wonderful. When I give a lecture, I'm talking, for instance, in Switzerland, and I'm talking to a group at the schoolhouse there, and somebody asked me a question, and I feel good about the question. And so I answer the question so perfectly, with a beginning and a middle and a conclusion to it, and so completely on behalf of the person, so completely that I am absolutely satisfied with having done it. Now, how do you feel about that? Okay, well, I feel very good. They don't know how good I feel. They don't know how happy I am that I was able to really clue into what they wanted to hear. Now, did they hear everything I said? Sure. Did they realize how wonderful it was? Sure. But did they realize how really wonderful it was? Not yet. It's got to sink in, because it's answering their individual needs. And when I walk out of an auditorium and I'm speaking to a group of people, and the auditorium doesn't clap, the audience doesn't clap, and the audience just sits there, and then I come back in the room half an hour later and they're still sitting there, and I say to them, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you weren't leaving. We'll begin part two now. And there was no part two, but I made one. And so we continued. And on and on and on. Sometimes in my lectures, they go on 3 and 4 hours. And I do not get tired in voice. I do not get tired of ideas. I'm in the flow. And when I'm in that flow, you could never give me a greater compliment that I feel in the flow, and I feel in the know, that I feel in the go with everything that I'm doing. It's just wonderful, gushing out. The rhetoric is exquisite. And however rhetorically I ask questions, people perk up and listen because they know they're going to get the answer too. And they know it's going to be an answer that fulfills their need. Now, how often do you ask rhetorical questions? How often do you say, "Would you like to do this?" Well, actually, they wouldn't like to do that, you know. And Ellen says, "Would you like to clean up the table, please?" And nobody really wants to clean it up. They're sitting here enjoying my talk, you know. And so they don't want to get up from the table. But Ellen says, "Well, I think this afternoon we're going to clean the house." And you all say, "Good." And so you go about cleaning your own house. And then Ellen says, "No, this house." And you just said you were going to clean the house. You didn't say which house. Well, My rhetorical question should have been sufficient to let you know what house it is. There is only one house here on the campus. Ellen, what house is that?
The monastery house.
Ellen, what house is that? It is the embassy.
Oh.
It is your house.
Okay.
Isn't that the only house? Ellen, whenever you're speaking of a house, you're speaking of your house.
Okay.
When you're speaking of the monastery, or you're speaking of Citadel, or you're speaking of the Oasis, you're speaking of Shangri-La, you're speaking of the Hermitage, those are other places. But when you're speaking of your house, you say, okay, love, let's go home. Now, that doesn't mean to the monastery, although he's up here a great deal. You see, your rhetorical questions are not misunderstood. Mm-hmm. You may think that you mean something different, but we know you don't. So Ellen says, all right, we've got the absolute monastery here with all these buildings, six houses and four retreats and so on. Now, I want them clean, spick and span, within an inch of their life. And let's start at the beginning. Now, where's the beginning?
Monastery.
The embassy.
Oh.
It's Ellen's house. Ellen's house is always first. Now, when we say we're going to clean up, now everybody, clean up the place. So, what does Sylvia do? She dashes over to the Citadel. You know? And what does Beatrice do? She goes into the library. And in the library, she cleans it all up and puts her clothes away and hangs them away nicely and dusts off all the things and waters the plants and vacuums the floor. Then when she's done cleaning the house, then she comes out and cleans up the rest of the property, you know. But first is number one. First is number one. Rhetorical questions teach us a great deal. And they give us an opportunity to have a great margin in our thought for any area of life that we like. But just remember, it's you that does it. Now, did you ever have your first kiss, and how did you feel after your first kiss when it was really your first kiss and you realized it was your first kiss? Did you say, yeah, so that's what it's like? Or did you say, "Wee!" Remember The Sound of Music? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am 16, going on 17. I know what to do. And you see, isn't that what we like to do? Mm-hmm. And do you think that the girl liked it? Do you think she was in heaven? Do you think she climbed in the window with all her wet clothes without the slightest reason to say why she did it? There's no question. I have been there and back. I have been to heaven and back again. And I'm a woman now. I'm a woman, remember? Mm-hmm. And then when she was up on the mountaintop and they all wondered where she was, and what did they say? How do you catch a moonbeam in your hands? Because as she was out in The Sound of Music and she was up on the hillside singing and dancing and enjoying the world and coming alive with the world, and the world just glowed for us as we heard her sing and as we saw her dancing through. And then as she was rushing in because she forgot the vespers that she was supposed to go to the prayer time, and they were all saying, how do you catch a moonbeam in your hand? Yes, how do you catch a moonbeam in your hand? And each one of us are moonbeams. And each one of us are the answer to our own rhetorical questions. Have a lovely, 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 lovely morning. And have a song in your heart all the time. And sing it out loud so that all the world can delight in the magic that you are. I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.